So if you would like to introduce yourself to start.
Heather Dunwoody. I was born in Dublin and I've lived in Dublin all my life. I was born in 1936, the 25th of April 1936, so I was 86 last week. Where I was born, where I lived up to the age of 12, was a very small village outside Dublin, which is now a massive supermarket and shopping centre. But in those days, it was just fields with cows, so it was a very very rural area in those days. So when my dad was the teacher in the local national school, which had a very small intake, maybe 40 pupils in all, he was extremely badly paid. And we struggled financially. My parents sat down on whatever day of the month he got his pay, and they sat down together on that day and worked out where their money was going to go for the next month before the next pay came in. So anyway, we moved from there because he moved jobs. So we moved from there when I was 12, and we went to live quite near to where we had been living, but it was much more, it was still rural, but it has become again very urbanized, but it was still quite rural when we moved there, and to such an extent that I went to quite a prestigious girls' school, but basically because I got a scholarship. And to get to school, there was no bus service. I had to ride my bike to the nearest bus, which was maybe a couple of miles away anyways. I had to ride my bike, get a bus into Dublin, and leave my bike at the bus stop where it was always waiting for me when I came back, not locked or anything else. So when Dad was teaching, he taught in a school that there was a primary certificate and an intermediate certificate and a leaving certificate, I suppose. So he taught up to primary level, and they would have been maybe lads of 14 going to school, and that was the end of their schooling after that. I went on as far as intermediate level, but there was no money for me to go any further. There was no free education or anything like that. So I left school at 16 and went on to do a secretarial course, as one did in those days. So I'm not sure what you want to
I suppose, so you kind of, you're 16, you've done your intermediate level, and then you kind of left and you're doing your secretarial course. How long was the secretarial course then?
Oh, it was a year, I think. It was the most boring thing I think I've ever done in my entire life. I just couldn't believe, because I just sort of been, school had been a bit of a challenge, and this was just sitting in front of a typewriter thing on the wall going A, S, D, F, G, F, D, S, A. It's just terrible, really terrible. So anyway, but I did get a fairly decent job out of it, which gave me money of my own, which was great. And that, I really appreciated having money of my own. I mean, the girl was school was an all-girls school, so boys were kind of, and I had only one sibling, one sister. So we were very much an all-women household, and no brothers or cousins even, because my mother was an only child, so we had no cousins on her side. And Dad's cousins all lived very, or Dad's siblings all lived very far away, so we had very little to do with them. So anyway, I'm just trying to think. I went to work in an insurance company. And again, in those days, women were not allowed to progress through a career path of any kind. And I used to get very frustrated by being told what to do by guys that, as far as I was concerned, were half-wits. anyway, it was an interesting time of life, but I think as Protestants growing up in what was predominantly a Roman Catholic country, we were very ghettoized. we would sort of have been in a youth club, or there were what we called hops or socials every Saturday night, but they would have been in a different church hall around the area where we lived.
Yeah.
And so we were very restricted. Our social life did revolve around the church activities. And I mean, the ghettoisation was because of this Nate Temera decree that was brought out by the Catholic Church, that if you married a Catholic, you had to bring your children up as Catholics. So that was a hugely influential with our social life, and our parents were sort of quite determined to try and keep as many Protestants in the community as they possibly could. We were very contained. And also in the 50s in Ireland, there was huge emigration.
Yes.
And I mean, there were stories about the entire engineering school from Trinity moving to Canada. I mean, there was a story that they actually hired their own plane to get themselves to Canada, because it was just no future for them in Ireland. Yeah. So we were, that was it. A lot of the guys had left. So we were, and then there was, as I said, there was no working through a career at all. And I got married when I was 26. So that was the end. You were gone then, out of work, basically, to bring up children and stay at home. Whereas my sister, she worked in a bank, and she actually did break the mold in that she was the first woman bank manager in Ireland. So that was a huge step forward. I don't know what else I can tell you about. I mean, of course, also leaving out the emigration, there was huge censorship.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so many books, and even Woman's Own, I think, was banned because it might possibly have told you about contraception or something like that, or you know, encourage.
Giving you ideas.
Exactly. Yes, yes. And I've always maintained that it was BBC television that broke us out of our little conformities. You know, we suddenly saw people, my God, are getting into bed one another and they're not married. You know, what's happening here? And I mean, there was no sex education or anything like that. And I remember one person I knew who was engaged, and she'd sent away to, I think it was Woman's Own or something like that, where you could get a leaflet about sex education. So she got the leaflet, but she wouldn't share it with the rest of us because none of us were engaged or getting married, so she wasn't going to let us read about it. So, but I mean, the number of books that were banned, films, you would go to a film and you'd say, come out and say, what's that about? Because a huge lump had been cut out of the middle of it.
So. Was that a thing then, that, you know, later on you'd go back and watch that film and suddenly realise that there was a whole chunk out of it?
Yes, 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 yes. So now I know what it was about, you know? Now I know. Yeah. So, I mean, we were, as I say, dancing even was just very formal foxtrot sores. And then we had rock and roll, which was huge. Wow. You know, that was really a breakout. We were just, it was the first sense of freedom, I think, really, you know, that you could get up and you could dance just in the aisles if you wanted to. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so would you have learned to dance in school then? Would that have been something you taught in school, or was it just something that you kind of ended up learning going to the dances with your friends?
Yeah, he just picked it up as you went. Some of the guys might have gone to dancing classes, but I certainly didn't. But, you know, we just knew with the rhythm, I suppose, you just knew what you were. But it was very 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, that.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So would you have kept in touch with them, the girls you'd gone to school with? Would have they been your kind of, when you were after work, would you have been kind of spending time with them, or were you more friends with the girls you were working with then?
Well, both really. I mean, one, I'm still very close with one woman that I was in school with. after all these years. But we weren't so much friends, I think, in school as we were both very keen girl guides, and we progressed to what was Rangers in those days, which was kind of 18 upwards, I suppose. And we would have gone on holidays together with guides, and we went to France, and we, what would have been about 1956, I suppose, we went to France.
Yeah.
And worked for a couple of weeks only in a, it was a sanatorium for girls who had TB of the bone. So we were supposed to entertain them. God help them. I think we did Irish dancing or something for them. and took them for walks. So, you know, Anne and I are still in touch. But about having my own money was sort of meant I could go on holiday, and I did go. And again, it was quite, you couldn't afford to fly. There weren't that many flights anyway. So I remember going to Austria, and you had to go from Dunleary to Holyhead to London, boat to France, train to Paris, and another train, a night train, to Austria. We did that a few times. And another time we went to Copenhagen, which was equally, I think it took about 2 days to get to Copenhagen and another 2 days coming back. But it was the 50s and the 60s were, well, the 60s weren't so bad, the 50s were just miserable. They were just miserable. Just, I remember having one holiday in the west of Ireland with a friend who worked in a factory. So she was restricted to 2 weeks, the first 2 weeks in August. And the guys who would have left Ireland and gone to work in England would be coming back to the west of Ireland for those 2 weeks as well. And every station on the way back, I remember at every station there was a man with a suitcase and the wife with, I don't know, 3 or 4 kids on their way back to get to earn money in England. It was just awful. It's just awful. Mm.
That it was so widespread.
Yeah. From all levels, they left. Mm. The men, not so much the women, but the men left. I suppose the women did as well. Anyway, what else do you want to know about me? What else have I got here? Nothing much. Yeah.
I suppose you worked in an insurance company. Like, was there, and you were saying that there wasn't really much room for progression. Yeah. Was there any kind of room for progression, or like in terms of kind of running a secretarial pool, or was there like any sort of room for moving up, like, even within the kind of what you were doing?
No. I mean, it was in the days when you took dictation and then you type back what you were told to type back. So the only kind of hierarchy would have been if you were allowed to go to the manager and be his typist or whatever. But the rest of us was just in a pool. But we had a good social life. Sorry. A good social life in the office. We had good fun, you know.
Yes,
Yeah. And as I say, having the money, having a few bob in your own pocket was, but I mean, it was a case of living at home. There was no, you didn't move out of home. You still lived with your parents.
Yes. Yeah. So you and your sister would have stayed at home then with your parents. And then, so you kind of stayed once you said you moved when you were about 12 or 13. So once you moved, was that kind of, you stayed there? From then on.
Yeah.
And then I suppose with the girl guides, was that kind of, did that give you some sort of kind of a freedom in terms of you were able to go abroad with them and kind of see a bit of the world?
Yeah. Well, you see, the war only ended in 1945. So 10 years later, things were beginning to open up. And I can remember that first visit to France. I mean, I was so stupid and so naive. I thought there's an awful lot of ruined buildings here. But it didn't cross my mind that they'd been bombed, because we would have gone to probably Normandy, which would have been a big what is the word, theatre of war, if that's the right word. And I was just, I'd sort of think, oh gosh, yes, there's a lot of ruined things around here, but it didn't cross my mind why they were ruined.
Yes.
Because, I mean, the war was something in Ireland that you weren't really aware of. I mean, you knew there was a war. There was no petrol for cars. Everybody saved bits of string because you couldn't buy things. But it didn't affect us. There were scarcities of things like flour.
Mm.
But we weren't having bombs. Because I remember some cousins coming in to stay from England when I was about 8, I suppose. I remember these people came to stay. And this girl, every time a plane went overhead, she ran and hid under a bed. And I thought, you know, what is wrong with her? You know. But we weren't, as I say, apart from scarcities, we weren't aware of any bombs or nastinesses like that. There were a couple of bombs in Dublin, all right. But it was just, I think, growing up, it was the power of the Roman Catholic Church. That was the, we were all had to conform to that, and it was very much in your face, very much processions. And when I was younger in the first house, we had neighbours, I think there were something like 12 children, and with to our two, and they were very much wanting to proselytize me, and I wasn't allowed into their house unless I used the holy water going in the door. And they would remember them forcing me to my knees in front of what I thought was a graven image. You know, I thought I was going to be struck dead by kneeling down in front of this thing. So that was the level of it, was in your face the whole time. So we just kept a very low profile.
So you wouldn't really have had many Catholic friends then. You just sort of had...
I did have Catholic friends, and my parents had Catholic friends.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, people... It wasn't that we disliked Catholics. We just did not want... They just did not want their grandchildren brought up in the Catholic Church as opposed to the Protestant community. So that's why there was this sort of... It really was a ghetto.
Mm.
Very and ghettoized. Then,
yeah. And then what was I thinking?
Never mind.
You mentioned the Girl Guides. I think one of the other kind of groups that I would be aware of that would be Girls Brigade. Was that anything that you were ever involved in, or were you more
No, they were Girl Guides. You were either one or the other, and never the twain did meet. Mm-hmm. it was very different. I think it was much more military, I think, than guides. Yeah. From what I can remember, they did a lot of marching, and they had a band as well. That was the good thing. The Boys' Brigade had a band.
Mm.
But I mean that they would have played in church rather than.
Yes.
These things are falling off my ears. Yeah, I mean, did a lot of theatre, actually, when I was first working. And I still do a lot of theatre. I mean, not on stage or anything, but just we'd have gone to the theatre a lot. And you could go to, we had a lot of shows that came from London in the 50s, early 60s. And you would queue. I'd get the cheap tickets and go to the gods where there, you know, there were no specific seats. Everybody just crushed in together. But we saw some great shows, some great theatre in those days. And there was also a small theatre in Dunleary they changed the plays every 2 weeks, a repertory theatre. Mm-hmm. And they had some great actors there that went on to, yeah, I mean, with Milo O'Shea, who went to Hollywood, and Norman Rodway, who went to the BBC, and, you know, they went abroad from there because the place had to close down because it was at the back of the back of the gas showroom, atmosphere that we couldn't get out if there was a gas explosion or something. So the theatre actually did close. But it was brilliant. You know, we did a lot of Tennessee Williams and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the outlet. That and cinema. We've gone every time to the local cinema. Every time the programme changed, we probably would have gone to the cinema.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I can't. Just, I don't think we were very politically motivated until, I remember, sort of, we were very a bit obsessed by the Iron Curtain, and there was a Hungarian Revolution in 1956 that there were a few Hungarians managed to escape and come to Ireland, and we thought the curtain was coming down at that stage. We got very excited about that, sort of glued to all the news bulletins, but I don't remember being anyway. There was always the horror of the IRA and what they were going to blow up next. But you kind of...
Yes.
That actually was later. There wasn't much going on in the 50s and the 60s, more the 70s. Because my youngest child was born in 71. And I can remember being on... We didn't have television ourselves, and being on a holiday in a house that had television, and seeing the riots in Derry with her as an infant, so I could sort of, but that was later. That was,
yes. And then, I suppose in terms of dating, like, how did that work? What kind of, like courting, going out with, like, would you have gone going out with your girlfriends, or would you have been going on kind of dates as such?
No, but both. A few boyfriends around you sort of saw for maybe a year and then got tired of them and moved on to somebody else, hopefully. But we did a lot with the youth clubs in the church. That was the main outlet, and a lot of people would have paired off at that stage. You know, a lot of that youth group that we were in did marry one another.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them, I think, stayed married as well, because, again, there was no divorce and no contraception either. So I think, I can't remember what year divorce came in.
I think it was in kind of 1997, was it? Sometime. It was late enough, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was 80-something in the 80s, yeah. And there was the Married Women's Property Act as well, whatever that was. You couldn't inherit.
Mm.
A woman couldn't necessarily inherit the family home or the family farm. And I think that changed in the 80s as well. I don't know when that changed. No. Anyway, I got married when I was 26, so just about out of the time frame. From the 15 to 25. And again, I would have met him in that youth club, but had gone to America and worked there for a couple of years. So he was kind of exotic in a way. When he came back, he'd gone somewhere and would come back again. So we're still together nearly 60 years now. So
it obviously worked out then.
Well, again, there was no divorce, so and I knew when my parents were alive, if I'd gone home to them, they'd have thrown me straight out again. You know, just told me to go back to where I'd come from. I don't think they'd have cared, if I'd been cruelly abused or treated violently, I imagine they'd have been happy enough to have me back, but not otherwise. Just get on with it, basically, was the message. So I don't know. That part of my life was actually quite a slow period. It wasn't, later I would have gone on to march up and down O'Connell Street campaigning for contraception and divorce and joined the Women's Political Association.
Yes, And was it a wrench? Because you obviously had to leave your job when you got married. Was that something that you found kind of hard?
I could have stayed on if I hadn't been pregnant. But once you were pregnant, you were definitely gone. I found that very strange. Yes, very strange. I really didn't. know what to do with myself, you know?
Yeah.
And having my first child was a big shock. I thought it would just pop out and I would go back to being what I'd been before, which I didn't, obviously. It was just sort of, well, once you had a child, that was it. I mean, I don't mean that was it. It was a 24-hour job, 7 days a week. And then I did go back when my youngest child was about, I don't know, I think she was 6 or 7, I did go back to work. But again, only ever in a secretarial capacity.
Mm-hmm.
But I was always, I hated not having my own money. I think that was the holy all of it. I didn't matter whether it was a pittance I was getting. It was just, it was mine. I just remember that big shock of not having any money of my own and having to say, I need a new pair of tights or I'd like some clothes. You know, that was, I just hated that.
Yeah.
So anyway, from then on, once I sort of got my hands on, I worked up to retirement age then, not with any great career prospects or anything like that, but I just wanted my own hands on my own money.
Yes, yeah. Just a little bit of freedom to
not
have to ask for everything.
Yes, yes. And as I've always said, what's mine is mine. What's yours is mine, but what's mine is my own. I'm having my own bank account and I'm holding on to it, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So.
Yes. Well, I think, I suppose, unless there's anything else that you wanted to talk about or kind of a little bit more, or I guess we're perhaps. Would any of your friends kind of have gone on, kind of finished out school or anything, or would that have been usual, or would most of you have kind of left around the same time you did?
Some of the girls that I was in class with, I mean, it was an all girls school. I think I probably said that, and it was actually, I went because I got a scholarship. I think I said that, but
yes.
It was one of the first schools that would have sent women to university. But there was no free education, you see. So certainly a few of the people I was in school with, in class with, did go on to Trinity. It would have been Trinity rather than anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And became quite, well, one of them certainly became quite famous. I think it was just the frustration of not being able to go on with education that I found. With hindsight, I think I was probably frustrated by. Sorry, you asked me something and I can't remember quite what you asked me about.
No, it was more just kind of out of interest. You know, would there have been many girls in your school who did kind of finish it out, or, you know, and again, you know, would you have liked to have finished out school, which you've said?
I don't know.